Everything with podcasting is always in draft mode. You can always change it. And so for me, the practice is, how do I get better at hooking people early? So if I have a great interview, can I put something that is going to be really meaty?
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
And we're back with another episode of the podcast on podcasting. And today we have a guest who has a story similar-ish to mine, where she started a podcast a while back and it grew and it did great. And then she decided to start a podcast about podcasting called The Podcaster's Journey. So we've got Allison Hare on the show. Allison, it's good to see you. In person.
Great to see you in person. My goodness, we've been.
Does this count in person?
It does.
It feels like it.
We're in the middle of a pandemic. It's in person.
Awesome. Well, Allison is the co-founder of what is called the Weekend Podcaster. So she helps people who come in during the weekend. Right now it's virtual, but I assume, will you do it in person?
Yes.
Once COVID's. All right. Yes. So right now it's virtual, but eventually it'll be back in person. Mm. And what they do is they take you from your idea. Maybe you've already got an episode recorded. Maybe you already have some podcast art. Maybe you haven't started at all. And they support you to kind of go from zero to hero over the weekend, which is kind of fun and kind of cool. So we were talking about that a little bit before we started recording. And I know that we're going to jump into that a little bit. I was also listening to an episode of yours. Part of an episode, I think it was episode 13. Your podcast sounds like shiz. All right.
You want to curse on here?
Yeah, you can. We put the little E sign on there. But I've got my kids, so I curse every now and again, but I always have like that.
The filter.
Yeah, I always have that filter because I'm used to being around my two boys and I want to, I don't know. Society says I shouldn't swear in front of them. So I believe society and I don't swear very much in front of them at all. And you have a son.
Yeah, I have a son named Danny. He's 8 and a daughter named Juliana. She's 5.
Okay. All right. They're not too far off. I've got 13. I cannot believe he's old enough to start babysitting. It's amazing.
Wow.
That's what I've been waiting for. You want them to get out of diapers. Then you're like, oh, hell yeah.
Now
I don't
money.
Have to change diapers anymore.
Now you want them earning money.
Yeah. So I cannot wait for them to be 18. So now at least I can leave and they can watch themselves and I can give them a buck and be like, oh, thank you so much. Here's a dollar before he knows better. And then later on, we'll kick him out of the house. So your previous podcast was called Culture Changers. I want to go way back to when you started it, what you were thinking, what you wanted to accomplish with it, what was difficult about that back then, what you learned. I know that's a lot of questions.
A lot of layers.
I think that's going to help me figure out, why did you start Podcaster's Journey? So just take me back how you were feeling when you started Culture Changers.
Well, thanks for your interest. I'm glad to be on this podcast. It sounds like an exciting podcast that you're launching as well. Yeah, I had spent, when my daughter was born, my daughter's 5, and I felt like I just had a bunch of circumstances that I had experienced and some kind of aha moments, whether it was through things along the lines of education, social justice, politics. We've all been kind of, whether we like it or not, have been inundated with politics. And having my children and feeling like I never got involved in politics. I never got involved with really anything. I didn't really volunteer. I started volunteering at my kid's school and helping with the education and really learning more about, wow, if other people could see what I saw and experience what I've experienced, their whole viewpoint would change. I think there'd be so much more compassion. I think there'd be so much more ability to help. And because I was literally in the trenches and kind of working with people and helping them, I thought that podcast Culture Changers, I interview people whose work breaks convention and does things differently. And I think because of the internet, because of how quickly things are changing, the old models no longer have to work. You don't just have to climb the corporate ladder to get anywhere. You don't necessarily have to graduate college. You don't necessarily have to get a master's to command a great income. There are 12-year-olds that are multimillionaires from YouTube. So it's a whole different world out there. And these are the kind of people that are maybe bucking the trends and they're breaking status quo and they found a new way. And that to me was really interesting. And so culture changers and podcasting in general was really born of frustration of, on one hand, feeling like I knew that voting once, and it's not a political podcast, it never was, but voting every 2 years was not enough. Like I had to change the conversation. I felt like there were so many viewpoints, so many experiences I had and so many questions I had and things I was curious about that what if I put together a show where I could invite these people who are doing incredible things, doing things slightly different or changing a direction, opening a new conversation. And what if we could change the conversation and spark people to make a change in their own lives? Because I think I never thought my voice mattered. You know what I mean? Like I knew I had a voice. I have a degree in broadcasting, but I never knew I could use it in a way that could help others and change and maybe see things in a new way. And that to me is where culture changers started. You had asked about what was hard about it. I think this is something that I hear a lot from new podcasters or people that are thinking about having a podcast where they have so many things that they're interested in and they hear about, I need to niche down, but I don't want to hang my hat on just one area. How do I kind of satisfy my own urge, my own itch, my own curiosities and stay true to who I am without being too broad? And so I think the journey from finding something or finding an umbrella that was specific enough, but could still allow my curiosity to play, I think was very hard. I mean, there are lots of hard things about podcasting, but usually what happens is that because it's typically driven by passion, usually it diminishes the hard things and you get through them.
Yeah. Well, with your new podcast, Podcaster's Journey.
Yeah.
What did you do differently intentionally when launching the second podcast?
Well, I had been coaching people. I think people would ask me all the time about podcasting. And so I thought, well, why don't I put together a course and teach people and see if people were even interested in it? I mean, I've got a full-time job. I've got 2 kids, but I'm always interested in entrepreneurship and what could that look like? And people were really interested and some really amazing shows have come out of these launch programs. So I kept doing it. And I just found that the struggle from a podcasting perspective, I was always trying to figure out, how do I grow this? How do I market it? How do I get in front of people that wouldn't normally be there? I felt like it was serving me because it really helped me allow me to dance with my curiosities and really get interesting conversations started. But I always felt like I was banging my head against the wall over how to grow it and what is good and what does engagement mean. So I decided to start a second podcast because I started doing episodes on culture changers about using your voice and about podcasting. And I was like, I'm so interested in this. What if I did a real-time experiment on how to launch and grow a podcast? So that's what it is. So it is like I'm teaching about stuff, but I'm also failing at it. Like I'm trying like paid growth versus organic growth. And like I just did a podcast episode about are reviews important? And I just crossed 20,000 downloads and after 12 episodes. And part of that was due to paid growth and advertising. I did a 1 week advertising stint somewhere, but I only had before that episode, I only had 5 reviews and 2 of them were written. And I'm like, God, you know, like what, how do I change that? So it is a very real look. I share my analytics on it. I try and make them bite sized. So normally they're no more than 15 minutes. So they are quick. And I'm really experimenting with different ways. Like, I think it's really important to hook somebody in the first 10 seconds. If you can, like at max, the first 30 seconds, you've got to really hook them and give them a reason to keep listening. Otherwise, you have a chance to lose them and getting good sound and all of that. So I've broken up the podcast into four parts. One is technology and equipment. The second is content and content creation and what is compelling. The third is marketing, monetization, and analytics. So really the numbers. And then the fourth part is I interview the top 200 podcasters and ask them how they did it. So I've had Brett Allen on, who is known to be a celebrity interviewer. And I've had Melissa Monti of MindLove on, and she had an unbelievable, incredible launch story and has turned it into a full-time business. I have Jeff Dollar coming on from The Upside. So a lot of exciting people that kind of runs the gamut, but it is so fun to kind of, it's fun to not have all the answers and to have some of the answers and know that when people are listening, I'm going through it with them. And some people may want the person that is de facto expert in it. And some people may want something that feels more relatable. And I'm taking both of those. So all of it is a big experiment.
So the four parts were number one, technology and equipment. Number two, content. Number three, marketing, monetization, and analytics. What was number four again?
Numbers. Top 200 podcasters on Chartable. So it's basically called the climb the ladder. And so I go from like Chartable 200 and then keep going of podcasters that are doing amazing things that are on there. And they might have a range of experience or excellence in a certain area. And those are people that I love to have conversations with and maybe provide some more insight to my audience.
So is it that you're going on to Chartable, you're looking for the top 200 podcasters in the world, and then you're asking them to join you on your podcast?
Yeah. So, but to talk about their podcast. So in many cases, it is and how they grew it. So it's almost like how I built this, but for the podcast. And I think what's interesting about that and what can be exciting for them is it's a different conversation than they're used to having. So if they are have a sports podcast or a news podcast or an interview show or something about motherhood, they're talking about something completely different. But because podcasting, as you know, Adam, it takes up a lot of real estate in your head and in your time. It is a passion in a lot of places that it's just not you flip on the mic and talk for 30 minutes and then you revisit it in the next week. It is something that you're always thinking about. And so this gives them another place to play.
Very interesting. And you've helped a lot of people start their podcast. And
yeah,
a couple of your notable clients was The Commercial Break, She Sounds Like Me, Stories Connect People, Freewheeling with Cardin, 6 Feet Above, and the list goes on. With those clients and the clients that you see at your weekend podcasters event, what are a few things that you've noticed many people have hangups on? And could you share with us how you overcome them?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And it probably is going to be a different answer than you expect. People's hangups are mostly have everything to do with perfectionism. And perfectionism is usually a fear tactic. It's a stalling tactic. And so a lot of times people will say, well, I don't want to launch yet because I want to get good at interviewing, or I'm waiting for graphics to come back from whoever, I'm waiting to figure out this, or I just don't have time. Or they might say, this I hear a lot is people might say, I'm just going to buckle down and focus this weekend and just get it done. And then they don't. And I think on one aspect, calling that out, like, listen, if you're going to do this, you're going to, I always recommend that people put it out on social media and put a date that's not too far away and announce their launching on that date because they will work for it. And so a lot of times people won't do that. before I talk to them because they, I don't know if they feel like they're Taylor Swift that's going to launch a surprise album at midnight and everyone's going to come. But I think it's really important to show people behind the scenes. I think people are really interested to hear like, hey, I just had this amazing interview and I completely forgot to hit record. You know what I mean? Like we've all done that. We've all had these gaffes. We've all had these problems with it. And I think going live and going public with it is really important. So on one aspect, it is to kind of put some skin in the game and put yourself out there is important. The other part is that maybe it's not for you. Sometimes people are told that they should do a podcast. It should be a part of their growth strategy and they're not feeling it. And I don't, maybe sometimes just giving them permission to take a step back. And when they're ready, they're ready. And if they're not ready, that's okay. Maybe YouTube is their thing. Maybe writing is their thing. Maybe it's not their time. And I think being clear on where they are, whether it is themselves holding themselves back or it's just not the right fit and they're telling themselves because people say, you should have a podcast. And they're not like, they're not really motivated that way. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I think permission in both ways to move forward or step back is important. But I do think that the perfectionism thing is probably the biggest hang up that people have that they're trying to get YouTube and the audio and the video and all of the things together at once. And it doesn't have to be that complicated. So I think simplifying it helps.
Really good stuff. How about talking about your four different parts? Just that the first one being technology and equipment, is there any common mistake that you see happening with podcasters, the ones that you're meeting on Clubhouse, the ones that you listen to, or even some that come to your courses? A common mistake in using the wrong technology or misusing the equipment that you might be able to help us with?
The first thing that comes to my mind is that if you look up best podcasting microphone, everything says Blue Yeti. And Blue Yeti is, you're laughing because I think you know exactly what I mean.
I hate the Blue Yeti.
It is a condenser microphone and it has a great marketing strategy because they market the hell out of this is the podcasting mic. Every single podcaster I know started with a Blue Yeti, myself included. And it is a condenser mic. And a condenser mic is great for singers. But what it does is it's so sensitive that it picks up everything in the room. And so you'll hear not only your voice, but you'll hear your voice bouncing off of walls. So you might hear a reverb with it as well. And if there are any fire truck in the distance or a whirring of an air conditioner, you're going to hear it all. And so I think the biggest mistake is going with a Blue Yeti. There are so many other microphones, the cardioid or dynamic, they're both kind of interchangeable. Cardioid just means that it's unidirectional, meaning you need to speak to it in a certain way and it's not going to pick up everything else. And there's so many mics for the same price or even less that will do a great, great job.
There's so many mics for the same price or even less that will do a great job. I got to quote you on that. That's
all
good.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm glad that that's what you brought up. How about recording? I use Zoom. A lot of people badmouth Zoom.
I hate Zoom.
So how do you do it?
I hate Zoom. Zoom is not optimized for audio and video. It is designed for corporate and to get a lot of people on recording or to be able to do a conference. I like Riverside. I think Squadcast is great too. I think any of the ones that are on the market now, they're designed for podcasters. So they do have optimized audio and video. What I like about both Squadcast and Riverside is that they have something, it's called continual uploading. There's actually a term for it. And basically what it does, progressive uploading. And what it does is it continually uploads. So for instance, Adam, you and I are recording right now. If the power goes out, it's already downloaded on the servers for Squadcast. So you can go back and not skip a beat or worry that you're going to lose data or lose audio. And that's important to me. I think from a video perspective, sometimes StreamYard is a great avenue for audio and video, and StreamYard gives you the option to live stream. So if you wanted to record a podcast episode, but at the same time, go live on Facebook, go live on YouTube, and really expand your reach, that's a great opportunity for you too. I think before Zoom, before the pandemic, I should say, people were using Skype. Skype wasn't as strong, but it was what people used. And then the pandemic hit, and Zoom really did. They built their capacity. They were able to amplify some of the audio and the video, but it's still compressed. And so that's why I recommend Riverside and Squadcast. I don't mean to bash you. Why?
Oh, no, no, no. I agree 100% that...
Why do you still use Zoom, Adam?
There is a good reason. Thank you for asking. Now I feel like you're interviewing me. I love it. All right. The main reason why I use Zoom is because I'm doing about 8 episodes every week. And usually 6, 7, or 8 of them are on just Wednesday. And if I were to use Riverside.fm, which would be my choice, then a lot of people might be coming in and testing out my personal link for Riverside. And they would be interrupting an actual call that I'm already doing, slowing me down, throwing me off my game. It's either that I give everybody my personal link, or I have to go in and update all of the calendar invites with the new link, with a unique link later on. And a lot of people miss those. They miss the emails, and it's the time of the interview. And just because I'm doing so many interviews per week, I don't care so much about the perfect audio quality or the perfect video quality. I use Calendly.
Great content, right?
Yeah, Calendly can just automatically propagate a brand new Zoom link, a unique one where I don't have to worry if anybody comes in on this interview right now. I know that it'll be just you and me. And so it's just much easier. But once Riverside changes, and I can go into my Calendly and make it so it creates a unique link,
right,
and integrates, oh my gosh, I'm all in, 100%.
Yeah,
I do have a lot of virtual assistants that I could probably have them doing all this, but they're already busy. So we're good. I will keep having this quality, and I think it's good enough.
All right.
Content. That is your second part.
Yeah.
What's the biggest thing to think about for content?
The first 30 seconds of your episode.
That was good.
If you can hook somebody quickly and give them a reason. I can't tell you how many podcasts I listen to, and I can't even get past the opening. Maybe it's because of bad audio quality. Maybe it's because they're doing a sponsorship or an ad. I think it's really important to hook people. I think about Dax Shepard's show. So Dax Shepard, armchair expert, he always opens his show with how excited he is over his guests. And it immediately goes into, we are support. Here's, like, he literally says, here's my interview with whoever. And it'll say, armchair expert, this show is sponsored by whatever. And so it almost tricks you into staying around. And I think there are lots of clever ways to do that. But I think it's important, whether it is through a clip, compelling clip in your show, or coming up with something that is really, I don't know if clickbaity is the right way, but I think from my perspective, all of this is a practice, right? So everything with podcasting is always in draft mode. You can always change it. And so for me, the practice is, how do I get better at hooking people early? So if I have a great interview, can I put something that is going to be really meaty right at the beginning, or write something in a way that's so compelling that draws people in? I think from a content perspective, yes, I think the first 30 seconds are the most important, but I also think it's really important to position your show depending on the kind of show. If you have a podcast that is unfolding a story or a narrative podcast, this may not apply, or if it's some type of drama unfolding, although it does help. But I think from a content perspective, it's important to create a relationship with your audience. And by that, I mean, you are talking to one person. So instead of saying, hey, everybody, hey, guys, like, hey, I'm so glad you're here. I bet you've had a really crazy day today. Like, it's almost like you're talking to somebody at a coffee table across from you. And that you don't know that those subtle differences make such a huge impact for you building trust with your listener. And so for somebody to follow you, to somebody to not only follow you and share your shows, which is like the ultimate, that is the ultimate compliment, is to share a podcast. And think about those times when you're listening to a podcast and you're like, oh my God, were they just in my head? I just had this conversation with Isabel and Natalie, and I'm going to text them right now. They have to hear this. That is when you are winning at podcasting. That's when you have done something really great.
Good stuff. Yeah, I love that takeaway with that hook right in the very beginning. I had queued up your podcast. So I really thought that was an interesting hook as well. I was going to ask you.
I'm experimenting. I'm playing around with it.
I love it. I love it. Number three was marketing, monetization, and analytics. What's a big takeaway for that? Number three, what's a big takeaway for the listener to use?
People are going to roll their eyes with it. A lot of people, we, Adam, you and I do Clubhouse a lot. And a lot of people ask about monetizing. A lot of people ask about growing their show, and everyone's got their own benchmarks for what is good. And I think the biggest benchmark is engagement. And engagement is, are you hearing from people off air? Are they reaching out to you on DM? Are they giving you feedback? Are they sharing your shows? Are they sharing your posts on social media? Are you asking them? And I think a really important strategy from an engagement perspective is to continually ask your audience, what are they struggling with? What do they like about it? What would they like to hear next? And give them options. I think if you leave it too open-ended, and by this, I mean like using IG, Instagram stories, they have the polls and the stickers and the questions. I think if you can make it as easy as possible for them to answer that, you start to build your own data set. And that data set allows you to create future shows. So whether that's feedback on reviews or even your analytics of, we talk about this all the time, that Brian, my partner and co-founder of Weekend Podcaster, he's got a comedy podcast. It is ranked number one all over the world. It's a hilarious show. It's done really, really well. And he used to do shows that were an hour and 10 minutes. And what he realized through the data and the analytics on the back end is that people were dropping off at 45 minutes. So if you start to look at a data set over time, you realize, okay, do my shows need to be an hour and 10 minutes? What is happening at that 45 minute mark? And then all of a sudden you get to start shaping your show in a way that's going to really serve your audience in a better way. But I do think engagement is incredibly important. And there are so many ways to invite engagement on your show. So whether that is leaving a review, and I think it's important when people say, please subscribe, rate, and review, I would not use those. I think that people zone out and tune out. They don't hear that. But if you say, I do a show on podcasting and I'm looking for other podcasters, so I want you, and this is me talking on my show, I want you to think about the people you know that are podcasting or are thinking about starting a podcast or have a great idea that you think they should start one. And I hope that you will share this show. I hope that you'll leave a review, because that's how I'm looking to reach more podcasters. And you leaving a review of how you were moved or you were helped or some idea that maybe helped you would make such an impact. So I think kind of unpacking and really guiding people to do what you hope that they'll do, or inviting them for engagement. And again, engagement might be like, I've got something on my show called the Podcaster Spotlight. And so I highlight and feature another podcaster. So I invite other podcasters to send me a 1 minute clip of their show. And then I play it and I highlight it and spotlight it at the end and put some social media around on it. And they're sharing it as well. And they're proud and they're getting more exposure. And I think it's important to think about whatever your podcast is about. If it is about motherhood, maybe you have mothers that are sharing their ridiculous stories of what their child said that week, and they could submit their stories. There are just so many ways to do it. But I think engagement is far more important than downloads. Downloads are not the same as listens.
I love it. You're absolutely right. And with the number four, which was the top 200 podcasters aren't chartable. Why do you do that? Like, why the top 200? Why not the bottom 200? Why not just any podcaster? Out of curiosity, what is the benefit to seeking that as your guest?
I think because if you reach the top 200 on Chartable, you've reached some level of success. And people are always looking to figure out, what is the new angle that I haven't thought about? Adam, you've been in the rooms, the podcasting rooms with me on Clubhouse, and people ask a lot of the same questions, and they ask, how do I grow? I feel like I've plateaued. I feel like a lot of times they just need a fresh idea. And so if I'm bringing people on that have reached some type of level of success, and usually I'm pretty mindful and intentional about who I bring on, that usually they have some type of focus or notoriety around what put them in the top 200. So maybe it is a true crime podcast. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's something about Harvard kids teaching people how to invest, like that are in college and millionaires. There's so many different aspects of who might be interesting. So for them, it's an opportunity for them to talk about maybe the back end of how they grew and go from there. I think people are always looking for how do successful people do it and getting some fresh ideas. All you need is one fresh idea and you can pull yourself out of pod funk or pod fade is what they call it, and it could re-energize everything. So my hope is to bring that as well.
So for the listener who's also a podcaster, but they probably aren't starting a podcast about podcasting like you and I. Mm. For the listener, how does this top 200 podcasters on Chartable help them to be able to find their right guests? Is there anything you can speak to that?
Ask the question again. I don't think I understand. Rephrase it.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about our listener right now, another podcaster, somebody
like
who's
how to
growing,
get other people,
but they aren't in our genre. They're not even in our genre. So how do they go about, because the top 200 podcasters probably won't help them since they don't have a podcast about podcasting. So what should a general listener be thinking about who they should have for a guest?
Okay, now I understand your question. So two things. I think that when you're starting out, it's important to start small. And by that, I mean somebody that you can get. So if you make a list of 10, the first one might be the kid down the street that has 9 cats. And then the second might be a manager that you work with that has an interesting story. And the third, it just keeps going on and on. And so like 10 might be somebody that we call it the ungettable get, like somebody that is there. So from one aspect, I think it's important to climb the ladder. Like a lot of people will say, I want Oprah Winfrey on my podcast. I'm just going to go for it. I would not want to practice my interview skills on Oprah Winfrey. So I think it's important to get some experience, but also surround those people that you want to get on your podcast with people that are kind of in their ecosystem or their sphere. I think the other aspect of it is to just ask. So if they're looking for people, I would do a hashtag search of your topic. Go on Instagram, go on Google, do a hashtag search of what that is, and then look at the top. You could put in top people in whatever industry, or just put a hashtag that would be on your category and see who you find. And I think you'll be amazed about how your world opens. Then a lot of times people will use the strategy, whether they do it recording or not, with people they have on their show and ask, who should I interview next? So you're always looking for, typically podcasts are going to be a continual ongoing thing. So you always, I think there's no shortage of people to interview in most categories. And some of it is just maybe looking in other places beyond your sphere of influence, or using your sphere of influence to get further and further out.
Allison Hare, it's been great having you on the podcast. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Adam.
A ton of value. So for the listener, if you're also a podcaster, you're wanting to grow as a podcaster, there's another show. It's called Podcaster's Journey, and you can find it wherever you're listening to this. So just type in Podcaster's Journey, and please give her a rating and review that you think she deserves, an honest written rating and review once you go there, and also let her know that you heard about her from here. Allison, thanks for jumping on. How else does the listener find you or get a hold of you?
Yeah. So I'm on the podcaster's journey on Instagram, or Allison_hair on Instagram. You can go to AllisonHair.com. You could do smoke signals. I answer to it all.
All right. You heard it first. Use smoke signals and she'll come running. Or the Batman signal.
And Clubhouse, Allison Hair.
Awesome. Allison, thank you so much.
Thanks,
and
Adam.
That's a wrap. This episode's brought to you by growyourshow.com. Grow Your Show lets you be the star of your show while we handle all the hard stuff. We offer reliable and affordable post-production services that allow you to grow your show organically without all the work. So go ahead and check out the website right now and feel free to schedule a call with me and let's take your show to the next level. Again, growyourshow.com. You just press record. We handle the rest.